Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're going to start today with part two of our special series, Evictions in East Boston. We're exploring a little-discussed consequence of the city's hot housing market, and that's long-term tenants who are pushed out as neighborhoods like East Boston undergo rapid transformation. Now, housing advocates say the problem is so acute, they're pushing for a significant change in city housing laws. They're pushing for a so-called just cause eviction ordinance. Lisa Owens-Pinto, executive director of City Life Vita Urbana, explained the proposal in part one of our series yesterday.
This ordinance would require corporate landlords to have a reason to evict a tenant at will. And if the corporate landlord wanted to raise rents a lot, then they would be required to sit down in non-binding mediation with the tenant or the tenant association to try to come up with a reasonable solution. And if they are not able to come up with a mutually agreeable solution, then the corporate landlord would go ahead with no-fault eviction.
Well, today, we're going to hear what developers and landlords think about the proposal. With us in the studio is Greg Vassil. He's the CEO of the Greater Boston Real Estate Board, a trade association representing real estate professionals and developers. Thanks for coming in and welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
Also with us today is Ralph Skip Schloeming. He's the executive director of the Small Property Owners Association, which mainly represents landlords in Cambridge and Boston. And back in 1994, Schloeming and the SPOA, or SPOA, were instrumental in the statewide ballot initiative that ended rent control in Massachusetts. Skip Schloeming, welcome to you as well.
Thank you for having me.
So let me get your first reactions to this proposal in Boston for a just cause eviction ordinance. Greg Vassil, what's your take on it?
Just cause would have a tremendous cause and effect on the real estate market in Greater Boston. As we all know, the market in the city is quite hot. There's tremendous development, there's tremendous production. The result of that is the simple fact that Boston for many years didn't produce enough housing. Just now we're getting to the point where we can. And our struggle is that we're producing for the high end of the market, not for the middle and lower income numbers. The factors are labor, materials, and certainly land costs. If we add more bureaucracy and government red tape to this process, it is going to be an absolute nightmare, and it will chill the market in Boston and send us back to the dark ages of rent control.
Okay. So, Skip Schloeming, I'm going to come to you in just a second, but Greg Vassil, let me just ask you a quick follow-up to that. The lack of housing for middle-income people in Boston is exactly one of the reasons why these housing advocates would point for a need for greater protection of those tenants and that housing stock that is currently in existence.
I would caution you because most of these people, these representatives, aren't advocates for the middle class. They're advocates for lower income people, affordable people, not the people in the middle class sector. If you take a look at the plan that the mayor's put forth for his housing agenda, he's truly trying to build for the middle class, for a lot of working families, not people who are on subsidy, Section 8, people who can't earn too much money because they'll lose their housing. Mm. That's the big issue here.
Okay. Skip Schloeming, do you see a just cause eviction ordinance in the same light that Greg Vassil has described it as a return to rent control?
Yes, it's the tenant advocates that are proposing it desperately have wanted rent control to come back. They've tried three times in the past around 2004, and they failed. And we showed the general, taxpayers in the city what's wrong. This is a devastating control of the housing being taken away from the owners and given to a bureaucracy. And it's not about corporate developers. That's what the advocates are calling it. But the non-controlled owners, or let me put it the other way, the controlled owners involve every non-owner-occupied 2, 3, 4, and larger buildings. And that includes many, many small owners who live just next door or down the street.
Well, let me ask you about that, and Greg Vassil, jump in if you've got a take, because when we spoke with Lisa Owen-Pinto, Owens Pinto yesterday, she actually said that by saying the ordinance would apply to those owners who have more than four units, that that would actually exempt the majority of landlords in the city of Boston.
It's more than four units, yes, and but it's also less than four units if they're not owner-occupied. These are small owners, and we can, you know, you can consider a small owner as someone who self-manages the property rather than hiring a management company. So you can own, a number of units and live close by and manage them very well, and yet you're labeled with this bad label of absentee landlords. It's going to affect these landlords. These are not corporate developers.
Greg Vassell, do you have a thought on that?
Well, I think when you take a look at what has been produced, especially these corporate developers that they're targeting, are we looking to do just cause evictions for people that are paying $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 a month? I mean, it paints with an awfully broad brush. When we take a look at what we're trying to do, the inclusionary zoning requirements for the city have just been changed and have been upped, and the fees are higher. There's a great step in the right direction to creating more. What the advocates have to realize is this isn't the land of Oz where you click your heels and snap your fingers and suddenly we have all these units. It takes time. It's a cycle. The reason we're in this mess is because nobody invested in Boston and built in Boston for a very, very long time.
Now hold that thought, because I do want to come back to it in a couple minutes because it's an important one. But Skip Schloeman, can you help us dig in a little deeper to some of the details why you think that even though this isn't, you know, on paper rent control, you see it as having the inevitable same effect? Because you've written about things like a just cause eviction ordinance could have the unintended consequence of, say, shifting the property tax burden to
absolutely
to owners.
Absolutely.
Okay.
To the non-controlled.
To the non-controlled owners.
That's right.
Now, why do you think that would happen?
Okay, that's because they are going after stopping all condo conversions, stopping all major renovations, and doing everything they can to keep rents down. And it means that the value of those properties will decrease immediately as soon as this goes on. And then as time goes by, if you are not able to do capital improvements, and let me just explain the trick of that. No, all rent increases that are more than 4%,
5%,
not 5%,
yep.
I'm sorry, get reviewed under a lot of pressure on the landlord to not raise the rent. Those are the rent increases that would be necessary for capital improvements being made. So if you can't make capital improvements, the housing steadily deteriorates. So it's going to keep going downhill. And just as it did under rent control, I mean, I lived in Cambridge. You could go house by house by house, and you could tell which ones were rent controlled.
Well, let me ask you, because they say that, you know, the proposal would require non-binding mediation if the rent increase would be more than 5%. It's non-binding. I mean, the landlord could ostensibly
right.
sit down in mediation, say we can't come into an agreement, and go ahead with that,
with
the eviction.
Right. That's
so what,
you're
so
right.
what difference does it
you're
make?
Right. Because it's not mediation. All the rights are on the side of the tenant. They get to have the free lawyer. They get to have tenant advocacy groups there. And the landlord's own tenants will be notified and brought in. And they are the most powerful force because they will be facing rent increases. And the advocates will turn all those tenants against their landlord. And no landlord wants to have hostile tenants instead of a rent increase.
So there's one more point that you've written about that I want to explore just briefly with you. You say that this proposed change to rental laws in Boston could actually hasten the death of small property ownership in the city. Now, why is that?
That's right, because the people who can handle this bureaucracy, who can hold out against the pressure about raising rents and raise them, are larger owners. But if you're on a one-to-one...
The real corporate owners.
Yeah, the real corporate owners. If you're on a one-to-one basis with your tenants, it makes housing much easier to manage. And if it turns hostile all the time, which is what the tenant advocates want, they want that to be a hostile relationship. They're not for mediation. Sounds friendly. This mediation will be no way will it be friendly.
So it's interesting because you make a point, and you've written about this, where you say that this could have the unintended consequence of accelerating big corporate ownership of housing stock in Boston. Now, on that point, Greg Vassell, let me turn back to you because there's a little bit of tape I want to play just to get your thoughts on. Because yesterday we featured a brief conversation with Matt Nickel, who's an attorney at Greater Boston Legal Services in East Boston. And one of his concerns and the reason why he supports a just cause eviction ordinance is he says, really, the issue in places like East Boston is the rapid what he's seeing as a rapid transformation of the neighborhood by very wealthy investors who are coming in and taking advantage of Massachusetts' no-fault eviction laws and therefore transforming East Boston. And here's what he says.
They can evict you without cause, without any, even if you're paying your rent on time, you're not doing anything wrong. So a lot of folks here are looking at ways to protect tenants in that kind of situation from no-fault evictions by requiring that landlords have some just cause before bringing an eviction case against a tenant.
And another thing Nickel told us, Greg Vassell, is that he believes that, you know, East Boston is emblematic of something that developers are trying to do, which is they want to create a new kind of neighborhood in East Boston, that the housing market is ripe for that. But in order to create that kind of neighborhood, they actually have to get the current residents and the current tenants out of the neighborhood so they can raise prices that match the new neighborhood they would like to construct or envision in East Boston. And that's where this no-fault versus just-cause eviction debate comes up. And I'm wondering what your view is on that.
Sure. He didn't tell you that there's a contractual relationship between the landlord and the tenant. Chances are these folks are only allowed to be there for 30 days if they're tenants at will. So if a landlord owns a property and the tenant only has a 30-day tenancy at will, there's no guarantee that that tenant could be there beyond. The landlord chooses not to renew. That's pretty well established across the United States of America for the way we understand. So, you know, when you look at this just cause concept, if you take a look at a literature search, it's really been tailored for rent control communities. Rampant in California, places like New York, New Jersey. But rent control there means something different than rent control here. In our model of rent control, there was no subsidy back to the landlord for capital improvements. In their form of rent control, there is a subsidy back to the landlord. So consequently, what we saw in Massachusetts with the Massachusetts version was decaying properties and no reinvestment in the properties. And that is a huge problem.
Well, yeah.
Literally, if you freeze the neighborhoods as they are, not put money into them, leave the rents where they are, not allow capital improvements, this is just going downward. There needs to be a process in some neighborhoods of renovation in order to get older buildings up and ready for the future. Because we have beautiful housing in this city, and yet we would be losing it because of deterioration.
Well, let me ask both of you a question, because you both have been in this business for a long time. You've seen the greater Boston area go through all sorts of ups and downs. I'm wondering what you make of the fact that, you know, housing advocates are saying that East Boston is changing so rapidly. It's not so much the change maybe that they object to, but the rapidity of it, that, you know, they're saying that it won't be much longer before 90% of the people who live in East Boston now won't be able to live there anymore. So, I mean, do you think that that's a problem when a lot of people are getting the kinds of eviction notices we saw that say, hey, your rent's going up from $800 to $2,000 next month, either pay or get out?
Well, let's take a look. They raise East Boston as the soup du jour. Let's take a look at the South End. If you take a look at the South End through the 80s and early 90s, it wasn't really the South End was probably a tougher neighborhood than East Boston currently is. And real estate runs in cycles. People view gentrification as evil. Gentrification is a sign of economic strength. It's a good thing. Because if we find a way to use gentrification and the improvement of neighborhoods the way we should be doing it, by producing housing for all, like the inclusionary zoning policies of the city, like the linkage fees that the city provides, we could build the communities where we have housing for lower, middle, and higher income people all together. That's our goal.
Skip.
And there's an option that is no cost to the city at all, and it would require a zoning change, and that is to make accessory apartments and subdivided larger apartments. Now, what this means is you can put an apartment in a basement or in an attic, you have to bring it up to code, or in the backyard as a so-called in-law cottage, or you take the large, you know, 2 and 3 bedroom apartments and triple deckers and divide them into 2 smaller apartments. Now, our households today are much smaller than they used to be. Mm-hmm. So these smaller spaces would be ideal, and they would be plentiful all over the city, and it doesn't take anything except a zoning change to get them to happen.
So my final question for both of you, because obviously this issue is part of the larger question of housing in Boston, about the economy in greater Boston, and also about, I guess, you know, wealth and who has it. And I'm thinking about this because just earlier this week, On Point with Tom Ashbrook did a whole hour following a report that came out from the Pew Research Center just this month. And I want to share some numbers with you and just get your sense about what it means for Boston. Because Pew found that in early of 2015, 120.8 million adults in America were in middle-income households. But 121 million adults were in upper and lower income brackets. And this is the first time that's happened in America in the past 40 years, that basically there were more people in the upper and lower income brackets than in the middle income. First time in 40 years it's happened in America. Obviously, something similar is happening here in Boston, and housing is just one of the ways where this trend is expressing itself. So I'm wondering what your take is on, you know, what the role should be for government, or is there a role for government to protect the middle class, to buffer the middle class, while, you know, the nation is undergoing this significant change?
I think it's a difficult concept to have everybody else be subsidizing the middle class, which is already in fairly good shape, you know,
even
just economically.
But it's shrinking, though.
Yeah, it's shrinking, but I'm not sure that they need, you know, reinforcement. Go ahead.
I think that the middle class is shrinking is exactly right, and I think it's a result of some of the policies that we've seen. But I also think it's a result of a global economy. When you look at Boston and the people that are acquiring and here and buying these high-end units, there's a lot of foreign money. It's a lot of foreign investors and people that typically haven't been in this marketplace ever before. Rates have been low. Money has been plentiful. They come to America. We've had groups from China coming over here looking to snatch up anything they can. They first look at Harvard, MIT area. Then they look at other areas of the city. There's a lot of international money that's come to Boston. They see it as livable. They see it as a fun place. They see it as a place they can send their kids to school.
People would say that that's a good thing or a bad thing, or,
well,
somewhere in between.
It's investment in our environment. It's something we can't stop. But how would it cut in a free market world where America is a free market economy, where we come out to the world, we've tried to feed the world, and we come to the world and say, don't invest in our cities? That would be insane. So I think it's something we have to deal with and then manage. So I think government needs to be smart in how they work with the development community to create units at all income levels.
And you don't see just cause eviction as part of that?
No, it will stop all housing construction, period. The unions will be out of luck. It's bad. The mayor's 53,000 units by 2025 will never happen.
Here's the concern I have about just cause is it even manageable? There's several hundred thousand units of housing. Who's going to handle these cases? What's the backlog going to look like? It's going to be just unbelievable. How is it going to be paid for?
Well, Greg Vassell, CEO of the Greater Boston Real Estate Board, a trade association representing real estate professionals and developers in the region, thank you so much for coming and sharing your perspective.
Thank you.
And Skip Schloeming, Executive Director of SPOA, the Small Property Owners Association, mostly in Cambridge and Boston. Skip Schloeming, thank you so much for coming in as well.
Thank you for having me.
And listeners, by the way, all this week we want to hear from you. What do you make of the push for a just cause eviction ordinance? Send us a tweet anytime at Radio Boston, or comment on our website, radioboston.org. And our series on evictions in East Boston continues tomorrow. We'll actually go to another major U.S. city that's had some form of a just cause eviction law since 1979. Have the tenant protections there worked?
my children are, you know, in their mid to late 20s, and I worry that they'll never be able to afford to move back to the Bay Area unless they become some big tech executive. And that's not what anybody wants for their community. You want to have a diverse places for people to live who are doing all kinds of jobs. And if we don't get a hold of this, we're not going to have the Bay Area that we love.
Lessons from San Francisco, tomorrow in our series. Stay with us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.